Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, Mark Poplawski. He's a professor of political science at the College of Southern Nevada. For the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada. This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shad, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Mark Poplawski. He is a professor of political science at the College of Southern Nevada. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you teach students. You take students to Washington, D.C. What do you tell them about what's occurring? Because it seems to me this is maybe one of the greatest times for any student of any age to understand how the system really works, how the presidency works, how the Congress's role is played, how the courts come into effect, and not just the Supreme Court, but the district courts, where it really all starts.
Well, I try to show students the essence of democracy and our representative form of government throughout it all. And I keep reminding them over and over and over again that it starts with we the people, that the people put these people in office and these people have to court the people in order to get their votes. And then once they're in, they have a job to do. And if they don't do that job, then we the people have to do something about it. I also point out to them that in Washington, D.C., there's tens of thousands of people working in our government who are not elected, who choose to serve, who choose to help manage and continue the flow of all the things our government and our nation does, and that the elected officials are the ones who get all the heat and all the media. But it's the working men and women who are really the essence of our nation's future.
And when people talk about getting rid of regulations, this is really one of the great mysteries that most people don't understand, is that Congress passes a law and then it goes to the regulators to figure out how to conduct this law. And that's where you get layers upon layers upon layers of the permanent government that exists in every civilized country, the same in Britain, the permanent bureaucracy. And how difficult that is for either the Congress or for the president to turn that ship around.
And it's true. When you talk about turning a ship around, and that's a great analogy, because you don't turn an aircraft carrier around in 100 yards. It takes many miles. And our country, the bigger our government has gotten, the more programs it's gotten, the more management it requires. Millions of bureaucrats working to keep the ship moving. And as an example, the Federal Aviation Administration. You'd think, how many regulations do they have? Yes, they do. But how many crashes do we have? How many accidents do we have that are catastrophic? We don't, because the regulations have been created to protect us from the 50,000 daily flights we have in America.
And, another thing that's interesting to me, and I try to explain this to people when asked, which is, we seem to give so little context to news stories these days. So when we talk about, a terrible situation where 10 people could be killed in a terrorist attack, but we don't put it in the context of, but in the same city, 3,000 people die per day of a heart attack. 50 people die crossing the street because to get hit by a car. You know, we don't put things into context. Yes, that was a terrible terrorist incident, but you should not cancel your trip to Paris because of one incident when you're in a city of millions of people that for the most part are going on with their daily life.
And I think the main reason for that is that American media has become entertainment minded. It's all about the ratings and the entertainment dollars instead of about educating the public. Because news is not just to inform, it's to educate. It's to take the people of the country to the next level. I wish we had newspapers and media outlets like you find in France and Germany and Russia in some places that are much more adept at critically informing the people than just splashing the headlines with gore and blood and proclaiming that this is the greatest conspiracy to ever touch our country.
Well, I've got to give credit to certain media outlets. For example, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Charlie Rose. There are places to go where you can find thoughtful conversations. I think that if you watch as many as you can of the Sunday shows, that you're going to get, you know, better informed. The problem is when people are watching things that are only ideologically in one direction. But then again, look at our state. There's a great book called Nevada Newspaper Days, and it talks about the town of Eureka, Nevada. And at one point before an election, they had five newspapers in that town. And they were all there for a political bias to run things before the election. And as soon as the election was over, they all disappeared. So this is not anything new of having media bias politically.
This is true, but I think that you have to keep in mind, and I agree with you about things like the Wall Street Journal, New York Times. Yes, they're great, great publications that do a wonderful job as journalists go. But here in Nevada, we have a dearth of good journalism. There's only a few really good journalists in the state. But you look at our television news, it's hokey, it's funny, it's comical in most cases.
You know what? I think that that is sadly uniform across this country. I was in New York City a couple of years ago on a Sunday night, and the lead story on one of the network affiliates in New York City was some drug bust in Queens. And I just thought to myself, you're in New York City. This is what you're leading your newscast with. You couldn't find somebody to come on and talk about something that the majority of people would want to know. I always feel, and I've talked to news consultants over the years, that local news should reflect the community that it's broadcast from. And in local communities, the majority of people are decent people, hardworking people, have kids who are going to school and doing their best to study and grow. You see plenty of kids coming through your school who are smart, bright, they're not lazy, they're going to be the future of our country. And yet we're not doing stories about these kids. We're doing stories that most of us will never run into those problems.
And I think part of the reason is because the media is targeting an audience that has money. In other words, it's all about getting the advertisers served. You know, if I want to sell cars, I'm not going to sell them to 18-year-olds. I'm going to sell them to 32-year-olds. And so I've got to pitch my message at all times, entertainment-wise and news-wise, to those people to get them to watch the program, to see the ads. I really miss good in-depth news stories. That's why I like to read the newspaper instead of just clips on the computer. I like to read in-depth to get all the facts of who, what, when, where, why, how that journalism is really about. And I think people would rather hear three sentences and form a conclusion than read three paragraphs and have to think about it for 20 minutes.
And I also would like to defend local journalism. I think that there are always pockets of credibility. And I think, for example, the story of the sale of the Review Journal, there was some outstanding journalism done at great personal risk to those journalists who, for the most part, all ended up working for other outlets, but discovered who the true ownership was of the Las Vegas Review Journal, mm-hmm. and won many prizes for that. And I thought that took a lot of courage to do that.
It certainly did. I mean, they let their principle guide their walk, not their budget.
Let's take a break. More with Mark Poplawski when we come back.
Your business workers' comp company should be your partner. The Pro Group customer care team brings you effective risk management training, support, and web tools at no extra cost to you. We maximize the safety of your employees and business every day. Pro Group is with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with information and resources at your fingertips. We ensure your employees' safety and that your premium's in line. When you're a Pro Group member, you have the team that's looking out for you. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you. Call for a no-obligation quote today.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mark Poplawski. He is a professor of political science at the College of Southern Nevada. So as you look at the next cycle here in Nevada, Adam Laxalt, got beaten up pretty good during the legislative session, but it seems that he survived just fine. He has strong support. Nobody on the Democratic side has announced yet, but most of it is pointing in the direction of Clark County Commissioner Steve Sisolak.
I have heard rumors you'll be hearing an announcement about that in the next week or so.
Yes, well, I thought his visit to Carson City to make a speech was a pretty good announcement.
Yes, it was.
And the amount of money that he has is in his war chest. Now, here's the question I have for you about this. In the last couple of election cycles, especially with the U.S. Senate races, we have seen so much third-party money coming into these races. Are we at a point where we are in danger, and let's look at the U.S. Senate race in particular, of us losing or the candidates losing control of their message and the message being pushed completely by third parties?
No doubt about it. Most candidates, though, find themselves to be in a very enviable position where they can spend their money saying, look how wonderful I am. And then they let the independent expenditure groups attack the opponent. And they can say, I got clean hands. I didn't throw the mud. I've just been talking about me. And if I were a candidate or a campaign manager, that's what I would do. But the independent expenditures, I think that one of the worst things that has happened to America is the total gutting of campaign reform by the Citizens United case. The whole purpose of Citizens United was to make sure that every voice was equal at the table. And yet Citizens United said, oh, corporations are people, but their voice can be as loud as it wants to be.
But at the same time, unions had the power to spend whatever money they wanted to prior to Citizens United. It was just codified in that.
But they were still limited on the amount they could give to each candidate. They were limited to the $10,000 PAC limit to each candidate. And they couldn't go out and spend independent expenditures for all these ads. I mean, the effort, Congress, when it makes efforts, it's always kind of half-hearted, and because they can't agree on limiting the money that they need to get elected.
Right.
I mean, the bottom line is what used to cost $500,000 to win today costs $10 million to win. And I have to say this in defense of the candidates, and I hope the voters out there are listening. The candidates, when they spend that money, are simply trying to get the voters to hear their message. Everybody says they're buying votes. They're not. They're just trying to get the voters to pay attention and listen. That's why they spend all that money.
You know, it's interesting. Senator Reid and I got into it last September when I brought up the fact that the Democrats had as much money as the Republicans did. And he was complaining bitterly that I was wrong about that. But the reality is, I think the Democrats may have more money than the Republicans.
And regardless of how much money they have, the key is where you focus it and what your message is. Our last two election cycles have shown clearly that if you have the right message, you're going to attract voters, regardless of the truthfulness or the salience of the message. If you have the right message and it rings the right bells, you're going to go places.
So what does that tell you? Because, you know, we know what reality is. You know, for example, and I'm comfortable talking about this now, but I certainly didn't at the time. Because I didn't think it was fair. But what, for example, President Obama campaigned on the first cycle, nobody could have accomplished what he was trying to accomplish. It would have been literally impossible. And so he did as much as he could do. But the campaign promises, no one is ever going to be able to live up to those.
But once again, the legend or the myth and the reality is that the president can only do what Congress lets him do. The chief executive doesn't make laws. The chief executive executes the laws that Congress is supposed to write. President Obama in his first 2 years was able to accomplish some things. I think the Lilly Ledbetter Act was one of the most wonderful things, setting aside a Supreme Court case for the right reasons. And I love referring to that. But 2 years later, when there was a Republican Congress, he would have never gotten that on. And right now, the president of the United States has a Congress that's the same party he is, but they can't agree on what their goals should be.
Well, and you know, that brings back to mind, you know, the whole thing of Obamacare, where Senator Reid had 60 votes on the Democratic side, and yet he had a minimum of three senators who were negotiating for their own deals that eventually didn't come through. But just because you have the votes, I mean, you would need 70 votes, not 60 votes, to get things passed.
It is. It's difficult because today the collegiality that used to exist in Congress is non-existent. Between social media and the instantaneous news and the gotcha mentality, the respect that members of Congress had for one another and the desire to work with and coalesce together seems to have vanished. I know it can come back, but they have to want to.
All right, let's take a break. More with Mark Poplawski when we come back.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Mark Poplawski, who is a professor of political science at the College of Southern Nevada. So based on how President Trump won the election, what does this say about future presidential elections? Because obviously he won. People were surprised, but he won. When other candidates on the Republican side tried to match his style of rhetoric, they failed miserably. But do you see people wanting to be that kind of candidate going forward, or do you think that that stays with Donald Trump?
I think there are a couple of reasons why they can't be the Donald Trump type model. First, he had no political experience and no political platform that he had to look back to see what he had done or voted on or said in the past. So he could say anything he wanted anytime. He also discovered that there was a core group that he could appeal to, that he could get out to the polls that maybe previously hadn't been. And I hope that I don't ruffle feathers, but I throw call these the throwback cons. The ones who wish they could go back to the days when liberals didn't exist, when social norms didn't exist, when people could be rude and obnoxious and prejudiced and stereotype all they wanted because their grandfather did and their great-grandmother did. And these throwback cons are different from your business cons or your morality cons. And Donald could pull some of the business, and he couldn't even get close to the morality cons, but all he had to do was give an alternative to the people who didn't want Clinton and the negatives that she had. Now, I don't think candidates today running for major office have that brand of freedom to do whatever they want and have the brand of he had nothing to lose by going there. Because if he lost, he still had his empire. Most politicians, it's all or nothing. You have to win every single pot.
Well, it was interesting because President Obama had a bunch of negative things in his past, and he wrote a book and talked about them all. So smoking marijuana, cocaine, these were things that could have been used as a club against him, but he dulled that effect by writing a book about it and owning up to it.
It's kind of, we call it immunization, you know, get the word out there first. But I truly don't believe that Donald Trump thought when he started running that he could win. I think it wasn't until he got into the primaries and started getting the feedback he got from the public that he goes, you know what? Maybe I can do this.
I disagree with you. The New York Times wrote a piece once the candidacy was underway and talked about how long Donald Trump had actually wanted to be president. He talked about in the past running to be governor of New York, and that was going to be a stepping stone for running for the presidency. He had certainly been involved on the other side of politics in terms of donating money to Republicans and Democrats and independents, because if you're going to be a power player and a major developer, you have to be involved in those kind of things. And, you know, for a long time, I'm not sure if it was a close relationship, but he certainly had a politically positive relationship with the Clintons, wanted to be friends with them, wanted to play golf with them, or with Bill at least.
Well, I think it's funny when you mentioned him wanting to be governor of New York, or think about it, if he had done that, that probably would have blown any chance he had for running for any other office, because they would have seen his management style in the first 90 days in Syracuse, or Albany, excuse me. And I'm, with all due respect for him and for every man who's ever been president, it is a very complicated job. I liken it right now to him going out and buying a 747 on the internet, and he's never been in an airplane in his life. You know, he has gotten into one heck of a complicated job, and he doesn't realize that administration and bureaucracy comes a lot before executive power. And that's the task he's got to learn, is he's got to change hats.
Do you think that he is going to be able to hold Secretary of State Tillerson, James Mattis, H.R. McMaster? Because if he were to lose those, or for that matter, the Attorney General, it would be very difficult to come back from that.
I expect within 12 months from now, at least half of his cabinet will be gone. Not just because of him and the things he says and does, but because most of these people come from the business world where when they snap their fingers, things happen. In the political world, cabinet-level appointees are simply the go-between between the president and a couple hundred thousand bureaucrats. And they simply have to try to move things one degree in a direction. They can't just stop and turn on a dime. And they're going to get frustrated.
And that's where we have to leave it. Mark Poplawski, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion. For romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature Build Your Own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
You can download podcasts of our show free of charge at iTunes. We'll see you on the next broadcast.